Like to call this meeting to order, please. This is the work session of the mayor and council of the city of Bisbee, county of Cochise, state of Arizona, to be held on Tuesday, June 6, 2017, at 5:30 p.m. in the Bisbee Municipal Building, 118 Arizona Street, Bisbee, Arizona. Ms. Williams, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Klein, not here. Councilmember Joan Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Frank Davis, not here. Mayor David Smith?
We have, he is excused.
Okay.
He is in Denver. And I'm sorry, and I'm here.
Councilmember Bill Higgins?
Here.
Councilmember Douglas Dunn?
Here.
Councilmember Gabe Lindstrom? Not here.
We do have a quorum at this point.
Richard J. Marsh, City Manager, Nina Williams, Deputy City Clerk, and Britt Hanson, City Attorney.
Thank you, ma'am. This is the time that we will be discussing the use of herbicides on roadways. How this and what I'm going to be doing is allowing the presentation to take place and then allowing then everybody that wants to discuss that to step up afterwards and they can discuss it, and it probably fits into a better context that way if you indulge me on that. How this came about is the fact that we have been laying down roadways like crazy, and we can discuss those standards. Those are at the proper and above standards for today's roadways. And we are having Bermuda grass growing up through the roadway in several different locations. And my discussion with Streets and Infrastructure was, what are we going to do about this? We have a 1 cent sales tax that went through to improve our roadways. We put over $1 million into the roadways so far, and these can be eroded very, very quickly. So what are the answers? Study these answers, please, and bring them back. And with that, a recommendation was made regarding glyphosate. And with that, then, I requested the Community Sustainability Commission to meet in a public meeting with the Streets and Infrastructure and to discuss this further, because I wanted their expertise in making any decisions that would come to the council. So having said that, that's where we're at. We're going to have a presentation by Mr. Steve Day, who is a member of the Streets and Infrastructure Committee. Mr. Ross is the chair of Streets and Infrastructure. And Mr. Ross, is there something you wanted to say before Mr. Day took the podium?
Well,
if you would, sir.
I would, yeah. My name is Ramiro Ross, chairman of the Streets and Infrastructure Committee, and when the mayor says, would I like to say something, I think it would be very improper if I wouldn't get up here and just greet everybody and say, come on in and listen to what we have to say. Pay attention closely to what Mr. Day is going to present, because he has gone into great extent to make a very comprehensive approach to what a solution is. Now notice that I said a solution, and the good mayor says that after the presentation there will be an opportunity to discuss any other solution that somebody might make. But based upon what we have gone through, we're going to recommend to the mayor and council that in their action session at the regular meeting that they go ahead and approve the application of glyphosate. I repeat that. Did I say it correctly?
Glyphosate.
Hey, I noticed the press over there is watching, so make sure you spell it correctly when you get to it. Thank you. Mayor, thank you very much for
thank
the
you, Mr.
opportunity.
Ross. Mr. Dave. This is a a PowerPoint, so some people will be able to see better than others, and I'm glad you're moving because I can guarantee you're not going to see there.
First of all, nobody's here to try and overthrow the herbicide ban. I kind of agree with the herbicide ban, so that's not what this is about.
This is a perfect opportunity for me to interrupt you real quick. Because there is a misconception. There is no ban. There never has been a ban. The fact is that the city has not been using it, that a prior council discussed at length the use of it, and there was a study done, but there wasn't even a resolution passed on that. It would actually just sat there and died for lack of further action. So I just wanted the public to know that. I've received many letters, phone calls, and so forth saying, please don't overthrow the ban. And I just wanted you to know there isn't one. Wow. So that's having said that, I promise I won't interrupt you anymore.
That's okay. Ladies, gentlemen, member of the council, Mayor Smith, welcome. My name's Steve Day, and I live in Naco, Arizona. I'm a member of the Streets and Infrastructure Committee, if I can get these things right. And I'm here today to discuss our new road surfacing project. A little background about about the town here, actually.
Get my pictures going.
I came to visit a friend of mine a long time ago. Actually, it was in July of 2000. And I actually really fell in love with this place called Bisbee. Never actually drove back to Seattle. I just kind of stayed here. Bisbee was and still is a wonderful little town. And it seems to me that people are working together and working hard to create a better, more pleasant place for all of us to live and call home. I see this, as you can see in the pictures. Early in the 2000s, we were required to replace our sewer system. And that contract we signed did not require replacing the road pavement where it was cut. Instead, a cement slurry was added, and it secured the sewer lines and backfilled the trenches, but the pavement was never replaced. The fill deteriorated quickly and left the roads in extremely poor condition, and not that they were pristine in the first place, but now many of them were completely destroyed. And I wish I had some pictures of that, but I don't. The city used as much revenue as that was possible to help keep old Bisbee in shape. This allowed the tourist industry to continue generating revenue. The tourist industry is an essential revenue source. We didn't really want to lose that. Okay? The rest of the town got basic maintenance and emergency repairs as necessity, and our revenue dictated. When Ron Ertley became mayor in 2004, he had, as part of his platform, promised to do whatever it took to repair Arizona Street. He and his administration had found and got and applied for and actually received a grant for close to $2 million. And through and with that money and the cooperation of the public and 6 years and a couple of other administrations, we have this beautiful roadway we have out front. This wonderful improvement to our community immediately inspired the people in this area and inspired its community pride, and the citizens made more improvement to their properties and their private properties, and the results were astounding. I've got a couple pictures of that here. If I can make this work right. Arizona Street, a couple of those. And actually, this is just taken a few weeks ago. We're not having the problem with Arizona Street as we are with other things. Seeing this, we as a community became aware that improving our streets and other infrastructure is a foundation on which to build a beautiful Bisbee. With community support like fundraising, gifts, donations, coupled with tax revenues, we are creating the wonderful place to live we all envisioned. Just look around you and you'll see. We got Grassy Park. We had Arizona Street. We've got the improvements to Warren Ballpark here, the swimming pool, what now is a pickleball court, the dog park, that's just to name a few. And there's a few other things, the entrance to town, and actually the light bulbs are up now. It really looks nice. In November of 2014, citizens realized in order to build the infrastructure required to create the town we envisioned, we would need more revenues. As a community, we overwhelmingly voted to increase the city sales tax to generate those necessary funds. And we want to thank everyone for their support in that arena. Excuse me. One of the first orders of business was to reconvene the Streets and Infrastructure Committee to act as watchdogs and to assure that the money was spent wisely and used only for its intended purposes. Other basic criteria was to work with, it was to work with a plan that had actually been put together from an independent infrastructure condition report that was done back, I think, when Jack Porter was mayor. We then adjusted that report to allow for health and safety related emergencies and repairs, and of course time and revenue saving practices. We purchased the necessary paving equipment, we hired a mechanic operator to take care of it and teach us how to use them correctly. We then had our existing road department personnel trained in how to pave roads correctly, and subsequently our paving has become some of the best of the quality in the state. We should be proud of ourselves for this. The community then decided on behalf of the community to choose what is called the MAG standard. This is a standard that was developed, I believe, back in the early 60s. It is basically the Maricopa County aggregate government standard. Back in the day when all the cities were growing together, they kind of wanted a standard for things like asphalt and things that this, so that when roads met, they would all last about the same amount of time. The standard actually is 20 years of usable life, and that is the minimum acceptable standard we wanted to see. In other words, the practices involved in the building and the maintenance of the roads and the, like the asphalt and all the equipment and the materials used, are designed and then modified as needed to achieve that minimum goal. Since then, we have spent nearly, I believe, $1.25 million on basically streeting equipment, paving, and all that stuff. This does not include the cost of the personnel to operate the equipment. This is just in actually materials and equipment. And we simply want to give you, the community, the best product for all of this money spent. It's a lot of money we're spending here. So as part of that, the fund begins here, and that would be maintaining all of these things that we built. Here's some pictures of them. As I've said before, they that would be maintaining the new surface in top condition so that a minimum of 20 years and possibly up to 50 years with proper care of usable life is achieved. And by maintaining the surface in a carefully planned fashion, we will allow our road system to be sustainable far into the foreseeable future. A road surface is a lot like skin. It has to be kept clean. The surfaces dry out over time and require occasionally to be have an emulsion applied. Arizona Street was an example of this process. There it is there. If any cracks form, they need to be immediately sealed and filled. That prevents water from getting to the underneath and then softening the base. And then if you drive over that over time, it breaks the surface up. A properly paved and maintained surface can remain crack-free for a couple of decades. And another issue with this is sweeping the streets. As part of the issue, if you sweep the street too, it keeps the grit and everything off and the surface doesn't wear down quite as quickly. This is all part of a maintenance program to maintain this. We figure if we get ahead of the game with pricing these roads, we will have a window of opportunity to then work on some of the more difficult projects we have with the funds that we have. So, but after a little over a year, we have started to see a serious problem that is causing a rapid and expensive deterioration of our road surfaces. And that, of course, is Bermuda grass. We haven't mentioned before. The ones that have dates on them, obviously, I wanted to say this was basically paved, I believe, in last November. The photo was then taken in March, and you can see it's already starting to come through and the damage it causes. This is a serious and rapidly growing problem. We weren't expecting it at this level at all. Okay. Here's a few photos of this, and as you can see, it's causing immediate destruction to the roadway and the surface. And we in the Infrastructure Committee were seeing this, and we actually started seeing this in February and been putting it on our schedules to discuss for about monthly ever since then, to what to do about this. It's really bad. And actually right now, because it hasn't rained, it's slowed down a little, but we have a little bit of a window of opportunity to maybe figure out what to do. We in the Infrastructure Committee saw this as an unacceptable and actually a preventable waste of a taxpayer's dollars. Okay. Now I got a little personal background here. I just want to let you know, it's like people see me around town, several people know who I am. many people don't really know my background. So, I've been involved with agriculture for most of my life. My grandfather had an organic garden. My father had an organic garden. I had an organic farm. We grew up in New Jersey. When my dad left his job in the community industry, we bought a small ranch in Oregon, and we started a mini farm there. He was an advocate of organic farming. I took up jobs with local orchards as a child, learned a whole lot more about it. I then got out of high school, joined the military. When I got out of the military, I moved into an area in Oregon called Applegate. Worked with some of the people there and actually helped in Oregon to ban the use of basically Agent Orange in the woods there because they thought that was the niftiest and most novel idea to kill the trees in the area. I then attended Southern Oregon State College, and there I studied botany, horticulture, and organic chemistry. I also have my own garden and occasionally sell organic produce at the farmer's market. Control of unwanted vegetation has been an integral part of my life since childhood, and for these reasons I was asked by the Mayor and Infrastructure Committee to research and give this presentation. And I'm just going to keep flicking through some of these pictures just to kind of emphasize the point. This is kind of serious. In order to provide an effective solution, the community talked with many citizens, and we feel that the most effective solutions would need to be based on the following criteria. First of all, effectiveness. If a product isn't effective, there is really no need to look at it any further. And we really need it to be effective because this has to be stopped quickly. As soon as it starts raining, you're not even going to be able to see that section of road anymore. Two, and probably the most important part of this whole deal, is the environmental impact of whatever we use has. And that includes A, toxicity, both acute and long-term, migration and runoff, and exposure to animals, people, and other things. The third and not quite so critical issue is the cost. Of course, if it's too expensive, we can't afford it, we can't do it. But basically, if it fits the first two criteria, then the cost is probably not an issue. But first things first. The only vegetation we want to remove is Bermuda grass that is actually growing through road surfaces as we see here in several areas. And we would recommend that we try to limit that to no more than a few inches to maybe up to a foot from the edge of the road, depending on the severity of it. Like in here, we would probably go off maybe 4 or 5 inches to get that one blob of grass that's off the edge to kind of stop its growth. Once it's stopped, chances are this stuff will never grow back again, which is kind of the point here. And in fact, of course, anywhere else, the stuff that's more than a foot off the edge of the road and in some of the road structures, Bermuda grass is an excellent soil holding quality, and actually anywhere else but in the roadway, we actually want to encourage its growth because during the rainy season it keeps erosion from happening. So it's kind of a two-edged sword here. Like I said, it's a great soil stabilizer holder. And like in ditches, along roadways, anywhere else where water erosion would otherwise be a problem, we certainly do not want to remove it. In fact, like I said, we want to encourage its growth there. An interesting thing about Bermuda grass is that it doesn't need light to grow. All it needs is a little bit of heat, which was generated when we put the hot tar on it, which is why we see grass growing in like February in some of these places. Now here it is. Here it's actually growing out. Like you can see, that's like 4 feet out into the roadway. If this was allowed to go through the end of the summer season, that whole section of road would need to be replaced. Thus our 20-year minimum. Here you can see some of the damage it does. You know, it's pretty severe. And it's like, if there were other options, please, we'd like to hear them too. The rhizomes will start to grow as soon as ground temperatures rise above 55 degrees and will grow without light until they find a way through. And obviously they can find a way through 2.5 to 3 inches of compacted asphalt. Doesn't seem to do it in concrete, though. But, of course, once it gets to the surface and form braids, rhizomes set out. And then, of course, if you have any dirt or anything in the road or any cracks, then they can send roots down. Repetitive sweeping and cleaning of the streets actually would prevent this type of progression. We're only really considered with what's going on here. Some of these, actually those rhizomes can grow up to 20 feet in a season, sometimes longer I've seen them. And if they're cut in any way or chopped up or dug up or rototilled or anything, every little tiny piece will then grow into another plant. It's a great survivalist. The seeds will sprout in soil, but not on the roads themselves if, as I said before, the dirt is swept up and off at regular intervals. That's not an issue. This type of growth pattern, of course, makes it very difficult to remove using manual release methods. I've used manual release methods on my own gardens, and they actually work very well, but you cannot turn a road bed up, cover it with plastic for 6 months, and not allow it to get wet and do that for a period of a year. So those types of release methods, although I reviewed them, are somewhat unfeasible, so I pretty much put those in the non-effective category. And of course, other manual release methods basically were the same thing. If you don't get every little bit of the root out, it just comes back. Other than manual release methods, and here's where we get to the touchy part, the other method of vegetation methods of vegetation management, of course, are chemical in nature. You have natural chemicals, you have synthetic chemicals to work with. Bad problem. I do understand that introducing chemicals into the environment is a scary proposition to our public. During our education, chemistry students are taught that all substances, including water, need to be treated as though they are toxic. Okay? We do not want to let anything escape into the environment that wasn't there initially. And that is basically a base level for chemists. That's why we tend to not die from poisonous stuff. We've also been able to maintain ourselves as an herbicide-free city, and I don't take this lightly, for like since the 80s when we first started not using them. We are a green city. We don't use any hazardous materials anywhere in our town. We should be very proud of these things. And so I understand that introducing the use of these things into our city is kind of scary to you people, to reiterate that. So if we are going to make use of these, great care, caution must be used. But as we have stated earlier, by not doing anything at this time, we'll just keep showing you pictures here, we will be effectively wasting millions of taxpayers' dollars. And this is basically, according to the Street and Infrastructure Committee, unacceptable to us. There are a few, but not many, chemicals that are completely effective on Bermuda grass, which you literally have to kill the roots. And you have to kill them in our situation by applying it to the leaves. We are kind of restricted in what we can do. Some of the things I reviewed required watering into the surface or cultivation afterward. Of course, we can't use those here. Some contains chemicals that have residual effects, like Roundup Plus and certain things like that, which have, you know, seed things that actually toxify the soil for up to a year after application. Some of the things they lay down on roads before paving them also have those same characteristics. I would not consider those. I do not like anything that remains toxic for a long period of time, at least acutely toxic. And, of course, some chemicals that are actually acutely toxic to wildlife and humans were in some of those things. Other issues were, and here's the fourth one I looked at too, some of them contains chemicals that are actually damaging to asphalt. Anything that has a chemical in it that is an ionic solvent, i.e. oil-based, limonene-based, petroleum-based, will actually dissolve and hurt asphalt, so it can't be used. Unfortunately, because some of those actually work quite well, but none of them actually kill the roots, which is a serious concern here. So we decided if they fit in any one of those four categories, we wouldn't consider them. That's one of the reasons we have most of these things I studied, and I think I sent Mr. Michael, or I sent somebody an email about all of the ones I've researched. Furthermore, because of the discussions we had with the public, furthermore, not only does this chemical we use have to be completely effective when applied to leaves and blades of the plant, but also, as I stated earlier, we'll also have to meet these environmental criteria. It must have a low toxicity level. It must have minimal or no migration or runoff, and must be applied in such a manner that there is minimal or no exposure to humans, pets, or wildlife. We did research on a number of products. And we'll just keep going through these, because this is the first natural one I actually, and this is the only natural one I actually looked at that claims to kill roots. So we'll just start with that. I did research on a number of natural products, all of which were great, ineffective to the effect they didn't kill roots. They were wonderfully effective on spraying on the surfaces. They kill them. They look dead. First time it rains, they come back. Okay. In fact, the only natural product is the one I'm showing here that even suggested killing roots was a citric acid and clove oil product. But when I studied the SDS, it was found to be more toxic than most of the synthetics. In fact, it was so toxic that even light exposure to the spray can cause serious lung damage and tissue damage and burns. It also has been, according to product reviews, less than stellar performance at killing the roots on Bermuda grass. It's other things, yes, but Bermuda grass, no. Unfortunately, I would have loved to have been able to use it. The other issue is that this actually requires a hazmat training to handle, whereas, believe it or not, that the federal government doesn't require us to have hazmat training to handle the glyphosate solutions. So unless they're concentrated, and then we have to. Otherwise, if we use the pre-mixed substances, we don't. That's another issue. Of course, that leaves us with synthetics, which I know sounds scary. So before I can go any further, few things I'd like to say. Just because something is natural, and I'm sure everybody understands this, doesn't necessarily mean it's safe. You know, nicotine, digitalis, all sorts of things like that, rattlesnake venom, of course, are quite dangerous and toxic. Just because something is synthesized in a laboratory doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. You know, we use dishwashing detergent, textiles, bleach, things like that. Some people don't, but, you know, those are typical things. And three, we want to avoid allowing any harmful substances into our environment. That is definitely critical. And here are some of the other things I have researched. And like I said, I sent Earl Doan a bunch of information. I studied probably 50 different things, looked at all the SDSs. This one particularly, I believe this one is like, this is actually the glyphosate one. And this out of all research actually has the least toxicity. Carcinogenicity is kind of up in the air right now. We do have a World Health Organization who says that it's possibly a human carcinogen, but they don't have the research to verify that properly. Otherwise, they wouldn't use the word possibly. So there is those issues. Also, in pockets in California, studies have been shown that glyphosate does cause higher incidences of, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So that also has to be addressed and looked into. But those are also because they're in agricultural area and in industrial, unprotected workers in industrial applications, which is not what we're doing here. So that's another issue altogether. Environmental impact here is, well, of course, effectiveness first is because we want this to meet these criteria. The only chemical, basically, that will completely kill the plant and root by being applied to the leaves that I know of, that I've studied, that I've even had people recommended things to me that I've looked at, is glyphosate. Unfortunately, I've looked at lots. Environmental impact of it. Toxicity of all of the chemicals I reviewed, and I give you some of it, toxicity is quite low in glyphosate. And in the proper solution, properly applied, has an extremely low toxicity index. The side effects that have been attributed to exposure to glyphosate seem to occur when it is repetitively ingested or repetitively breathed as a fine mist. This, of course, is as a result of Monsanto creating GMO crops, which allow us to over-apply it and thereby allow it into the food stream and things that, when it was initially produced, could never possibly happen. We will otherwise will be using a low-volume, low-flow, basically hand application method. We would be recommending that a binder be added to it that once dry, basically you can't wash it off with high pressure water and it stays where it is until somebody comes by and sweeps it up with a street sweeper. And we're also recommending that, and because of this, the spreader binder also keeps from running off. And we're also recommending that we put a dye into it to keep the exposure to animals and people. When we add the dye to it, it lets anybody and everybody know who's walking there that it has been applied in the area. It also aids in preventing overexposure because people who are doing the applications will realize that it's already been applied and doesn't need to be reapplied. Again, we're dealing with a toxic substance. We want to be as extremely careful as possible with it. Of course, cost again. Since glyphosate seems to be extremely inexpensive, and it is the only one that is totally effective, of course, the cost issue is probably one of the least necessary to discuss here. There are many inexpensive generics available. I know a lot of people don't like Monsanto. I don't like them either. I don't like what they do and what they stand for and how they're trying to monopolize and control our food systems. I really have reasons. I don't like the GMO corn, and I don't like the misrepresentation of facts they use to get these things by our Congress. People who haven't been educated well enough to know these things to be not true. So I agree with lots of those things as far as the environmental issues go on this thing. And I really, Ace Hardware makes a wonderful thing that actually is a 1.9% solution that already contains a thing, a binder that basically makes it rainproof in 2 hours. So there's, I'm not saying that we should use that particular variety, but there's a lot of them out there that are safe and we don't have to support that. Repairing, and we're just going to go on a little bit more. I'm going to close with some things here now. I'm almost done, thank goodness. Repairing and creating new road surface helps generate a renewed sense of pride in our neighborhoods when they are done. Subsequently, almost magically, the areas appear to prove themselves over time. And I'm just showing you some shots here of where this has kind of happened. Like when you drive Arizona Street to Congdon Avenue and you make your stop there, you look up and see a nicely paved street. Looks good. And you say to yourself, some of those houses might look interesting. Your curiosity is sparked. Instead of turning, you drive up Congdon Avenue. Instead, because you're not avoiding the potholes and all those other barriers, you're actually getting to look into people's yards, see the nice houses, and you will notice that people are taking pride into their yards. And it is actually very nice to see if you go up. If you have the time, you should go do it. This phenomenon was first noted by myself and several others after Arizona Street was repaired. Subsequently, over the years that followed, people cleaned up their yards, painted their houses, opened new businesses, etc., and it is now a very nice and relaxing drive for someone with a little bit of extra time to make. And it also makes it easier for people to get to and view your homes, and which probably would make it easier if you have them up for sale. In closing, I would leave you with this. We have a serious problem here. If we don't address it, we're going to be wasting a serious amount of taxpayers' dollars. The recommendations we are making is not to overthrow anything, but to actually create something that is worded so specifically that it will only allow the use of this product on the specific sites that we say, and only within 12 inches of the road. That doesn't mean the Parks and Recreation System can spray it on cracks and sidewalks. That doesn't mean anybody in the city can just start using it for whatever purposes they like. And this will be oversought, and an immense amount of oversight will be put into it. I want to allay the fears of this because I do understand, and I have read some of the information that was sent. I've got some stuff from Michael Gregory, and I do not disagree with some of the things he says. It's an important issue. But for a very minimal amount of money and a good proper amount of oversight, we can solve a very costly and expensive problem. I want to thank all of you for your time and putting up with me.
Thanks, Stephen. Thank you. I'm going to say just a couple of things, and I'm going to ask you to stand there for just a minute.
Take too long.
I have asked for this study because, as mayor, I think it's important that part of my job and our jobs are to save as much money as possible and provide the services necessary to the community. And this situation kind of reminds me of the old adage, the hurrier I go, the behinder I get, because we are spending this money to put out a good quality product, and it's being deteriorated very quickly because of a method of not being able to fix it. And so that's what I've asked for. Contrary to social media and so forth, I don't have a position on this. As mayor, I've asked for a study on this so that we as a council can make an informed decision as to what to do about this. Now, I want to ask a couple questions that have come to me over and over and over, and that is, one, why can't we use vinegar?
Well, vinegar is effective at killing the tops of the plants, but I don't believe it kills the roots. The other thing is I would really like to work with people to come up with a solution other than glyphosate on this problem. If someone wants to test things in their yards and keep, you know, do measured experiments to show that this is effective, whatever other method, I'm sure we could recommend that method. I haven't been brainwashed by Monsanto to be a Roundup preacher. It just unfortunately happens to be the only thing that I can find right now that will work effectively and stop the problem. The other issue is, if we write the wording correctly, as is with the sales tax thing, is that we can actually put a sunset clause on it. We're going to do this for a specific amount of time, and if it works, we shouldn't have to do it anymore. Because I know I've used it experimentally in desert areas, and when applied in rotation with desert plants that normally grow, you allow those to die and then water and then apply it and kill the crabgrass. The crabgrass or the Bermuda grass doesn't come back the next year. In fact, all the desert plants take over, and all of a sudden you're not really having a problem with it reappearing again. So, I mean, that is our hope. I mean, our hope is to be able to specifically apply this, to stop the problem, and then not have to do it anymore.
Right. I was bringing up vinegar because that's been asked many times. Another thing is Clorox. And I just would
actually,
like
Clorox
to say,
is more carcinogenic.
Exactly. when people think about that,
or Prop 64, it's a serious carcinogen, actually. But yeah.
I think that it's important, as my understanding, is that this grass really is growing up where the roadway had deteriorated previously, and so we're down basically to earth at those locations. The new roadway is going over that, and so the Bermuda seed is in there and has an ability to roots.
Roots, yeah. And I live on the end of Wilson Road, and you will. They have treated that road, but they haven't had to treat it since. It's because once there's no Bermuda grass growing up in the road, it encroaches along the edge, and as long as they keep it off the edge, it really doesn't grow up into the middle of the road. So once it's stopped, we hopefully it's not going to come again.
Right. And I've also heard that why are we having this problem when no one else does? And I would invite people to check Highway 92, 80, and 90, because those problems do exist. There is grass.
Yeah. That's on the shoulders there. I've noticed that.
Through those road beds. And so it's not unique to us, but the fact is we're putting down all this warm asphalt, and everything's just right.
Well, initially, and this actually plays in Arizona, so initially, as actually part of road building protocol, is the first thing you do is blade the ground down, compact everything, and then you actually spray a broadcast herbicide on it to prevent any growth of anything, and then you pave.
Correct.
We didn't do that here because we said we wouldn't use herbicides. That cost us the guarantee on Arizona Street. We built that street, paid $2 million for it without a guarantee. So,
correct.
I mean, it comes with a cost. And like I said, wanting to be a green city is good. I mean, I'm not against it. And actually, to push come to shove, if you look at the USDA regulations on organic farming, they do allow, and it is the only herbicide they allow on an organic farm, is glyphosate. And you're allowed to use it in your path. Because if it's used properly, it can never get into the food stream. If you spray it on a food plant, it kills it. You can't eat it. And that's why it was initially developed. When they came up with the GMO product so you could fly airplanes on it, spray it at 100 times the rate so it drips off the corn under the crap you want to kill, yeah, I have a problem with that myself. And that, I'm sure, causes cancer.
You know, right, sir.
I get an argument with me from that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Ms. Klein, you want to... Oh, okay. We'll hear some Ms. Susan Blackford.
Before we start, Mr. Muir, since it's a work session, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
Okay. There's a lot of things on the agenda, in my opinion, tonight, and I'll be speaking on some of them, and it's not just because of me, that if we go over just a little bit over the 3 minutes, can we do that so we can finish what's important for the council to hear?
No, 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I'm almost ready here, Nina. Okay, you ready? Okay. Actions have consequences. On the May 8th meeting, was there an environmental professional there that could explain the effects of using Roundup on the roads, water, and human health? I've done some research as much as I could on Roundup. Has any of you done that? And there is a city action form, I think, in around the year 2000, that does prohibit herbicides, and I wonder if that can be presented and read to the council. This herbicide, in some reports, state it is fine, some low levels of cancer, and one done by EcoWatch on January 23, 2015, 15 health problems caused by the use. In many studies, it's not just so much the Roundup, it's what the ingredients it is mixed with. This is why anyone spraying this must have a licensed pest control person to do so. Also, there's a requirement that the city, before starting, get a written approval from the EPA and the Arizona Department of Agriculture before it can be used. Is this in the audience? Has this been explained to you all? Will this be done? Let's look at the consequences of the inferior paving done so far under the supervision of our Public Works Director, Mr. Horadic, who I see is not here tonight. One of the major signs of poor paving is weeds. All the public director needed to do was follow city code to use the MAG standards per our subdivision code, and the charade could have been avoided. Already, $1.3 million of our 1% sales tax money has been spent. We are not Tucson, where there are roads are already prepared to just pave. We have codes that were put in place in 1985 on how to pave our roads. Was this followed? This is what is required under our city code to pave our streets. One, design the roads. Two, grade the road for correct drainage so the problem does not occur. Three, the most important, once this was done, put down a petroleum mat, not a chemical barrier, like a sheet of rubber to act as a barrier for cracks and weeds. If this was done, we would not have the weeds. You put down an aggregate base, then you put down the asphalt. And we know that none of this was done, we will never know because no testing by a certified lab as required by city code was done, and I have that in my agenda item. I will explain at that time what else I found out. Mr. Day stated that this has not been a year since the we've paved and the weeds are coming up, proving my point exactly. It was not done to code. It was not done to approve paving. There were no testings, there was no report, and no certification.
Thank you, Ms. Blackford.
Thank you.
Mr. Ryan J. Bruce.
Good evening, Mayor and Council, City Manager. I'd like to thank Mr. Doan and Ms. Rock for coming tonight. It's a little disappointing as one of the initial members of the Community Sustainability Commission that all the members aren't here tonight. As a work session, I think that this is an important part of this. I'd like to talk about this at the regular session, so I'm going to touch upon a different thing here, which is to say that the original members, some of who are in the audience tonight, did a lot of work, and even prior to that work, the genesis of the Community Sustainability Commission was from a group of people, including Adriana Bedal, who was not yet mayor. And that was where the idea of this commission germinated. And the idea was focused around the fact that of this very issue about herbicides and pesticides. I'm disappointed that we're having to have this conversation again, and I understand that there is a relatively large issue in front of you all as to how to address it. One of the things that the commission was charged with was not only a sustainable existence, but also a quality of life that takes in all factors of the way we live here in Bisbee. And the idea that we have created this problem, perhaps unseen, but obviously not without history of paving roads, not only in this town, but others. I would encourage you to, and actually encourage the Sustainability Commission, to relook at this. At least one member has talked to me and felt that her decision on this was predicated upon information that perhaps she didn't understand correctly. And I appreciate that there's a study that can go forward from this, but I really encourage everyone to participate on some level to understand exactly what we're talking about here, and I think some of the other people who will talk here tonight will point some of these points out. I do want to thank Ms. Klein because she was on the on the council when this issue came up and took a great deal of her time to talk to me as well as other people about this issue and voted the right way. Thank you.
Ms. Sharon Rock.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council, City Manager. First, I'd like to say that I have resigned from the Sustainability Commission, and I was not present at a meeting that it looks like I was at in the city records, which was May 8th. I was not at the work session. Joe Ward had not accidentally not let me know that that was happening. So if that could be corrected, I would appreciate it.
It will be corrected, of course, when the minutes are read and corrected at the next meeting. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. About 7 years ago, I was looking for something specifically to kill Bermuda grass here in Bisbee, and I researched the effects of glyphosate, there we go, and I was told that the surfactants were likely more harmful than the active ingredient itself. And I learned that it was most likely relatively benign. This was, again, about 7 years ago. So I purchased some, and I want to tell you from my experience that the substance does not easily kill Bermuda grass. My success was mixed. It was significantly reduced, but it continued to survive in spite of multiple applications and varying strengths. Fast forward to today, if I were looking for an herbicide to kill Bermuda grass, I would no longer use glyphosate, and this is why. On March 20th, 2017, a panel of international experts in the cancer research arm of the World Health Organization reported that glyphosate is a probable carcinogen to humans. Not a possible one, but a probable one, and that's a very big distinction. In March of 2017, the California Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment determined that it will list glyphosate under Proposition 65 as known to the state of California to cause cancer. Are you all willing to gamble with our health, with our children's health, our pets' health, and perhaps most importantly, the health of wildlife? It's so easy to rationalize something because it's easier or it's less expensive, and I'm certainly not immune to rationalization. Nonetheless, I believe that the residents of Bisbee have previously made their will clear. We don't want synthetic herbicides used. If you're going to propose an ordinance related to herbicides, please propose one that bans herbicides, not one that permits them.
Thank you, Ms. Rock. Mr. Richard Green.
Hi, everybody. I'm Richard Green. I live in Old Bisbee. I perform maintenance and repair in Old Bisbee primarily, and I've spent literally hundreds and hundreds of hours removing Bermuda grass from foundations, sidewalks, and roads, and it's very, very hard to get rid of. It cracks the foundations. It could cause the concrete to crumble. It actually grows through the concrete, and any crack, any small crack, it will find its way through that and weaken the foundation. So it's really destructive. It's not a native species, if I'm correct in saying that. It's not indigenous to, hence Bermuda. And it's invasive. It's really, really nasty grass. But it's not impossible to remove from gardens. I've been trying to remove it for a while now, so I'm staying ahead of the curve. I urge the city to stop planting Bermuda grass, first of all, and try to remove all the Bermuda grass on city property without Roundup, if possible. It looks like it's going to be questionable in this instance whether or not, however many millions of dollars the city has spent already, it's probably a good idea to save that investment before it's too late. And tell all the hardware stores that to stop selling Bermuda grass and sell something a little less destructive and maybe native. Thanks.
Thanks, sir. Ms. Maggie Cahan.
First, I want to thank you guys. Oh, my goodness. This is exactly what we need to do. Sit around and talk about what do we want to do as a city. It's amazing. And Mayor, thank you, and Council. I know it takes a lot of time to do that. And Mr. Day, incredible. You don't get paid for what you did. So many hours. And I'd like to do a little applause for that. It's amazing. Thank you. That shows a lot of commitment. Hard decision. I'm totally against any kind of chemical poison. You guys probably already would know that about me. I do have some questions. Is Roundup exactly the same as glyphosate?
Glyphosate is the main ingredient in Roundup.
Well, I heard that surfactants, whatever those are, that combine with the glyphosate are sometimes is more dangerous than the glyphosate themselves.
We can't have this going on because of a TV audience.
Oh. Well, he was up here. I was going to ask him questions, but that wasn't available at the time. So he could come up with me.
Yeah. Do so. Please.
I think we need a lot more discussion about this. I would hate to rush to something if it didn't need to be decided right away, that we could do something experimental. So my question is, what you were proposing with buying that chemical glyphosate, is that without the surfactants that are harmful, is it less harmful than Roundup, which everybody's hearing so much about?
Well, it's a hard call. It depends on whether you use it as a surfactant. A surfactant is basically soap.
Right. But is it got less chemical additives than Roundup? Which is whatever.
Well, it depends on which brand you purchase. Like I said, I've researched lots. Ace Hardware Weed and Grass Killer 2 is a 1.9% solution, which is actually a low solution of glyphosate. It contains a silicon-based surfactant, which when dry also holds the stuff on the plant and prevents it from being washed off, and therefore keeps it from getting into the waters and getting washed in the stream. So. That's a hard, you actually have to research individual products. And actually, it is true, some of the stuff in Roundup, their initial Roundup, this surfactant, it was actually harmful to fish and aquatic life because that's what the issue is with that.
So again, more research.
Yeah.
And is it primarily the newer streets that have been repaired that are seeing the damage with Bermuda grass?
You know, that's the only streets there, actually. The other ones kind of have some on the edge.
Right.
Or in the cracks between where the curbing is, but actually the new streets.
Or the ones with the problems. Because in driving here from Old Bisbee, I didn't notice anything. And you're saying, I think it was newer streets.
Yeah, and the old streets that were actually only chip sealed before. Old streets that actually had good base pavement, you never really probably got it.
Okay.
What about, now, it was brought up about the vinegar and the salt. And I know that Andy's not here. I did hear him talking about experimenting with that substance. Is it possible to experiment, take a little bit of time, get a group of people that are willing to put the hours in to experiment with non-cancer driving?
Sure, if we
could encourage it.
Okay. So I did hear you say that earlier, and I so appreciate that.
If we can
time
get...
Time is of the essence. So as soon as it starts raining, half those streets are going to be destroyed.
If we can actually get those people... See, the problem we have, as you're aware, is we receive a lot of ideas, but not the people behind them to complete those ideas. And so, yes, if a group of citizens want to get together and come forward and say, here's who we are, there's six of us here that like to get together, here's what we'll do, then I think that's a wonderful idea. Mm-hmm. But I don't, coming up with an idea, we need six people to do this, isn't going to help us. You follow me?
Right. No, we need solutions that are going
to
be long-term.
No
just
pun
to
intended.
Let you go with the salt issue, salting the earth is actually a permanent destructive force. Once you put salt in the ground, nothing will grow there for like 50 years.
But if we can keep it to the roads and keep it stuck like they do with the glyphosate, we can be effective on the road.
Yeah, salt deteriorates asphalt.
That's what I was going to ask you. So that wouldn't work with the salt. Okay, so, you know, I guess, thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve.
I just think we can maybe spend a little time. I think we do know that Bisbee doesn't like having chemicals that are cancerous put on our roads. I think that we have several organizations that have met over the last couple of months since our new president has been elected, and we're trying to decide what we can do as a more volatile group within a community. So maybe if you wouldn't mind considering that when you go to your session in the next hour, is that I would say that we would be able to come up with at least six people that would come in to the Sustainability Commission, possibly.
Also Streets and Infrastructure.
And that's where we would go to then, because since the Sustainability Commission voted to go ahead and do that, they don't seem to be that open-armed about finding an alternative. So I'd like to work with the Streets Commissions directly to see if there's a way that we could do something within a very timely amount and a short amount of time.
Right.
The rains are coming in a month.
Yes,
and if we could do something in the next couple of weeks, I would love to help with that.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Council, any questions? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion.
I move that we adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor of adjournment, state aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We stand adjourned. See you in 31 minutes.